It says April 30th, we're learning the seven minor prophets, and we're reviewing Nahum, Habakkuk, and Tzfanya, and we still have to finish off the very end of Tzfanya, but I'm going to do that as we go through all three of these Nevi'im. Nahum's main focus is the fall of Ashur, and what he does with Ashur is what Nahum talks about, the fall of Ashur. Habakkuk talks about the fall of Ashur and Babel, and Tzfanya talks about the fall of Babel. So you see the progression, Ashur, Ashur, Babel, Babel. And a similar theme pervades all three books. And this theme is not unique to these three books. In fact, I mean, I just happened to coincidentally discuss this in my Yeshayahu class right before this, is that this is the main focus of Yeshayahu chapter 9 and 10. And, amazingly, the main focus of Parshas Ha'azinu. You've heard of Ha'azinu at the end of the Torah? What is Ha'azinu, after all? Ha'azinu starts off by saying, I gave you everything. I gave you rain in its season. I gave you a beautiful land. I gave you the fat of the land. And what did you do? Yishman, Yishun, Vayivot. You became fatter than the land. You became fat, and then you kicked back at me. You became very wealthy, and then you used that wealth to turn on me. Right? So what did I do? What usually happens when Bnei Yisrael become immoral? What's the next step? Think of Sefer Shoftim, think of Moshe Tanach. Yeah? A nation becomes powerful. Moav, Plishtim, Aram, Amon, get it? The nation becomes powerful, and they are the rod of God's wrath. The terminology Yeshayahu actually uses, Shevet Apo, the rod of God's wrath, in order to teach Bnei Yisrael a lesson. Can't continue with this immorality. Right? You'll destroy the entire nation with this immorality. Right? Okay? So, the nation wreaks havoc on Israel as God's messenger, but they go too far. They don't see themselves as playing some kind of role in this. I'm not sure why we should think they should, but the prophets say they became too arrogant. They say, who can bring me down to earth? Right? Shall the... explain this metaphor. Shall the axe become more powerful than the hand that wields it? Right? The axe is Ashur. The hand that wields it is God, giving them this grace, raising them to this power in order to be... the rod of his wrath, as it were. But you want to become more powerful than the hand that wields you. So I won't suffer that much longer. You went much further than I said you should. Right? So just as, for instance, Haro was performing some kind of mission by enslaving the Jews, didn't God instruct Abraham of that mission? He said, you don't say that you gave me as a Rachel Beretz Kol Lahem, but we're doing you some Abraham El Shana, right? The power was still punished for doing so, for fulfilling God's very word of his mission, either because he went overboard or because he still used his free will to do those terrible things to us. Right? Might you ask a question, why does God predict that power will do this only to punish him for doing it? It's already, you know, it's predetermined, Kibio. First of all, God never told Abraham which nation it would be. He didn't say Egypt. Egypt used its free will to perform this. Okay? So they're punished. So this is what Nahum, Habakkuk, and Tzfanya all share in common. They speak of this nation, in the case of Nahum Asher, in the case of Habakkuk Asher and Babel, in the case of Tzfanya Babel, in order to... They mentioned what those nations did that went beyond their mission in being the rod of God's wrath, of giving a lesson to Bnei Yisrael what happens when you're immoral. Okay? Everyone clear? How does that relate to Ha'azinu? That's exactly what Ha'azinu is. Right? And Luchachmu Yavinu Zos, if they were only smart, they would understand it on their own. Right? Those nations. But they became so arrogant, so okay, they're going to get theirs too. They will come and go. Right? All three of these Nevi'im Zephaniah and Nahum more than Habakkuk, but all three of them use profoundly creative literary devices. Right? Can you give me some examples of literary devices? Like, alliteration is a literary device. Buka, umbavuka, umuvlaka. Pik birkayim. Remember, he used poetry. Nahum uses poetry and alliteration.
Rhyme.
He uses rhyme. That same pasuk has a limerick. A limerick goes A A B B A. Na 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 na. C and D are the same. There's a pasuk like that, no. Or Zephaniah. Remember last class we did Zephaniah, who talked about Ekron that will be uprooted. Ekron te'oker. Azo te'ozbu. Remember that? I'm not sure why he didn't go and say Ashdod Shudad. I mean, that's such an obvious one, for goodness sakes. He mentions that nation. You know, what you're going to do to Ashdod is a great Hebrew word, right? I don't know. I mean, you know, pick on an American city and say, you know, you have to know the language very well. Right? Okay? Pittsburgh will go to the pits, you know. Okay, so, but you should know that others in Treyasar do this very well also. Okay? And there's always a chap. It's always a. And, you know, because when you use a literary device, it's easier to remember, right? Rhyme is easier to remember if it's catchy, right? But you have to know the language. If you say Ekron will be uprooted in English, what does that mean? Ekron tail care? Oh, now you're saying something funny. Okay. Now, Hosea says, you commit adultery like a baker. Really? How does a baker commit adultery better than anyone else? Right? How do you say adultery in Hebrew? Niuf. What's a baker? Ofe. Right? But it goes more than that. It's not just the pun. It's just that a baker gets up at 3 in the morning to start eating the bread and breakfast, and he finishes work by 10 a.m. By that time, all the men are out in the fields working, and he has his free hands of all the women. He knows which women are alone at home. So a baker commits adultery better than anyone else, Taka. And Hosea picked up on this. You guys are all committing adultery like bakers. Yeah? Okay, Lamaisa, these are some of the literary devices that you find in these three prophets. And they are, it's interesting. Because Nahum has some Hebrew that's just very creative. Okay, and do you remember in the very beginning of Nahum? Very, very beginning of Nahum, where it says, "Mason Ninve Sefer Chazon Nahum El Koshi." Remember, we had the very first pasuk of Nahum. We decided whether is it Mason Ninve Sefer Chazon Nahum, or is it Mason Ninve Sefer Chazon of Nahum El Koshi? Because there could be a difference between the two. And the difference is, according to Rashi, in the Masorah, is it Chozon? Chozon means a vision. Chazon means a vision of. Musaf is a Musaf prayer, or Musaf sacrifice. Musaf means Musaf of. Take the day, Shabbos, or Shabbos. Chozon and Chazon, according to Rashi, two different things. Right? And it's an afkamina whether he's saying his own vision or fulfilling a vision of someone else. Who was that other person who spoke about the fall of Ashur that we already learned about at the beginning of this semester? Why isn't this falling out of your mouth? Yonah. Okay? It's an afkamina whether it's a chazon of someone else that was already spoken? Or is it the chazon of Nachum himself that he wasn't may not have been aware of Yonah, or wasn't thinking of Yonah? Yonah is a long time before Nachum. Right? Yonah tried to escape God's mission because of what Nachum ended up saying. Nachum speaks about an Asher that's already destroyed you. Yonah didn't want to give the message that might lead to Asher's rehabilitation, right? Because Yonah, as a prophet, knows what Asher is going to do if they're rehabilitated. So I'd rather escape and not render this mission. The irony, of course, is that he was guaranteed success by escaping. Remember that most of you gave by Yom Kippur, right? It was because Yonah refused. Had Yonah gone straight to Ashur and said, "Oder bram Yonah within men epoches," yeah, what probably would have been their reaction? A little after another water, the way they do to everyone else. But it's only because of his grand successes, right? Grand successes in what? That when they threw him overboard, he managed to survive that, and then he shows up alive 3 days later. We got to listen to this guy. He's real. Okay? That is the difference between chazon and chazon. It's depending on whether it's davuk. You have to open up in front of you. Is it davuk to Sefer, or is it davuk to Nachum? Can you determine from the trup? Can you determine from the trup of the first pasuk in Nachum which one it is? The ta'amim. Look, you have it open. It's not a haftorah, but it still has trup. Masa ninve sefer chazon Nachum el koshi. It goes in one direction.
But
if you go with the trup, strictly speaking, the trup. By the way, you can go with the Hebrew. The Hebrew says it's smichus because it's not chazon, it's chazon. Obviously, if you say that it's sefer chazon, right? Trump reads it Sefer Chazon. The Masorah has it as Chazon. That's a problem. Following? The Ta'amim read it as Dargo Sevir. Sefer. It should be Chazon. Right? According to the way the Hebrew is written, it should say Maso Ninve Sefer. Chazon Nachum Ha'el Koshim. You see the trope on the word Sefer? Is a
half stop.
It's not even a half stop. It's a Meshoritz. You know I'm saying? There are two types of trope. A Meshoritz and a Mafsik. Mafsik means stop here. Meshoritz means go right on to the next word. Right? For instance, Mapach, Pashto. Mapach is a Meshoritz. Mapach means go to the next word. Pashto means you can stop here. Muna achokev kata. Right? Don't stop here. Stop here. You can hear it. You can hear the music. If you have even a small ear for music. Right? So, muna achri. Don't stop here. Stop here. The Meshoritz is usually a quick drop. And the Mapsit, stop here. Don't stop here. Stop here. Okay, so there's a Masoretic problem in the first pasuk in Nachum. Is he saying his own original chazon, or is he saying a chazon from someone else? That's why it says sefer, because this might be that he's grabbing on to someone else's sefer, namely the Yom. Rashi in the first pasuk discusses it, and in this it's a problem because the truck wants the word chazon, right? The word chazon wants a different truck.
Maybe that's a lover. You have to.
Okay, maybe it's both. Interesting. Okay, Viter. came across what looked like a half-pax legomenon. Remember what the half-pax legomenon is, guys?
Yeah.
Right, so we came across a word in Perek Beis that said, Eish Plodos. Eish Plodos. And we thought that this word Plodos never appears again. So, looks like a half-pax legomenon. But, half-pax legomenon is a word that appears only once in the entire Tanakh. Sounds like a foreign word. It sounds like maybe it's Akkadian or something. Right? It's plodos. So, Mr. Nabosny correctly pointed out that there are a good hundred such words in Tanakh. Some are eminently obvious. Right? There's a passage very few times it says, until Nigzarti me'eretz hachayim. I have been cut off from the house of the light, the land of the living. One pasuk in Tehillim says, "Nigrazti me'eretz achayim." That's just a mistake. Hebrew does this. There's 100 such words. A lot in Tehillim. It says, "Kirbom." Kirbom. Their insides is their everlasting world. It should be "Kivrom." Their grave is their everlasting world. Right? In the Torah you have Keves and Kesef. Right? It's true, I know that the Tzif says that one is a younger sheep, one is an older sheep. But, or Simla and Salma. You familiar with that one? Right? Right, remember I gave the example of the Amalekim went to the back lines and they attacked Kol HaNechel Loshim. Half-pax Legamana, that Shorish never appears again. That's Nechel Loshim, Nechel Shalim. Hashal is one of those words, Hashal in Hebrew. What a Nechel Shalim. That's why I gave it away. It's Nechel Loshim, your weak one. It's Chaloshim. You hear it? This, why does it happen? It just happens. Right? It's allowed to happen. Right? So Plados is, therefore, Lapidot. See that? Just exchange these two letters. It's Eish Lapidot. You get it? Okay. So short book like Nachum, just 3 chapters, with all of his literary ingenuities, don't be so surprised that he mixes up letters the way it's commonly done in Tzibach. Okay? Yes.
Are we going to be getting like a?
I'm going to be with you right now. Let's just keep. Don't take any more time. Okay. All right. So Nachum probably lived to see the fulfillment of his prophecy. He speaks of the fall, the end of the Assyrian Empire. Right? And historians actually are called Assyriologists, people who study Ashur. Assyria reached its end just amazingly at the time that Yirmiyahu starts giving prophecy. Hear this, hear it clearly. Yirmiyahu speaks of, you have a little respite because a great enemy has just been subdued, but there is new enemy coming from the north. Mitzafon tipatach hara'a. The evil is coming out from the north. That's a new kid on the block. Not Asher anymore, but
Greece.
Yeah? Bovel, thank you. They're to the northeast, but certainly to the north. Kimitzafon tipatach hara'a, says this prophet in one of his first prophecies, and that is Yirmiyahu. Okay, so just as Nachum is finishing, Yirmiyahu is beginning. It ought to be good news that Ashur is finishing off, right? But let me tell you, you know what happened when Ashur? You know what happened when Ashur started to crumble? A power from the south, Egypt, wanted to carve up the crumbling Assyrian Empire. Remember I wrote on the board, the map? They wanted easy passage up the eastern border of Israel. Yoshiyahu. And he came out with them with arms. So that's why, that explains why Nahum spends so much time speaking of the fall of Egypt as well. He mentions Egypt as well. Because with the fall of Ashur came a threat from Egypt as well. Okay? Everyone clear? Right, Egypt killed the king, Yoshiyahu, who was a good king. We read about him on the first day of Pesach, on Haftarah. Brought down great reforms. But the Assyrians killed him. Right? And then, the Egyptians killed him, and then they killed his son 3 months later. They killed two kings of Yehuda within 3 months. And the rest is, that's it. The rest just fell within 20 years or so. 2 years. They fell in love. But they had one last chance to rehabilitate Israel with Yoshiyahu, but the Egyptians killed him. So that explains Nahum does treat mostly Ashur, but he speaks upon Egypt. Okay.
Right? An interesting Masoretic thing happens in chapter 3 is that Nahum moves into femininity. He refers to Bnei Yisrael in feminine. Okay? Hine amech noshim v'kirbeich. Pasuk Yud Gimel. You turn to a nation of wusses. Of course, this wouldn't go over today. I'm afraid I'm on tape. I might get in trouble for this. But he refers to the Bnei Yisrael as women. And then all the pronouns turn to feminine. First to the Israelites standing up to the Assyrians would be like women. Now, in other places in Tanakh, Yeshayahu also calls them noshim. They're like creditors. That's another pun, but the message is that you will capitulate to them. You can't even stand up to them. They'll have their way with you. Okay. Now, as far as Habakkuk goes, please make sure that you remember we spent quite a bit of time on this. Theodicy in the Bible.
Do you have more of this?
We compared. He gave out a few different times. I see if I have an extra copy here. We compared Habakkuk's question. Habakkuk questioned God. How can you allow these Babylonians to succeed? You're weakening our resolve. No one studies your Torah. And I compared at the time, because I know I gave this out, we compared at the time the... We'll just make sure that you get this now. Compared at the time, the question Habakkuk asks in the beginning of his book with a number of biblical characters who spoke with similar chutzpah. Right? Beginning of Habakkuk speaks of with such brazenness. I'll tell you why nobody studies your Torah, because you allow the wicked to thrive in you. They crown the tzaddik. The tzaddik is laid low. So who would bother keeping your Torah? All right. The last message of Habakkuk starts with the words al shigyonot, because Chazal say that he regretted speaking to God with such chutzpah. Right. The end of Maseches Makos. Remember, we talked about the different ways that the end of that very different prophets reduced the Torah to certain principles, underlying principles. Habakkuk is the last one. Tzadik be'emanaso yichye. If you have your amuna, everything else will fall into place. And he came to amuna at the end to recognize that what we see here in this world, we see the thriving of the Russia and the suffering of the tzaddik. We don't have the big picture. We just have to have amuna that there is a picture. He regretted talking to God with such chutzpah. Right? No one here remembers comparing this to the way Avraham speaks, and the way Gidon speaks, and the way Yahushua speaks. Come on, I remember doing it inside. Right? And Moshe. Right? Okay? Habakkuk is waiting for an answer. He starts in Perek Beis by saying, "Al mishmarti emoda besyatzva al matzor v'asapel eros ma'idaber bi." I'm waiting, God. I'm waiting for an answer for you. Iyob talks to God that way. Yirmiyahu in chapter 12. Your book is open, so bring a whole Tanakh. Yirmiyahu chapter 12 says it outright. Madua derech v'sharim solecha. Why do the wicked thrive so well? Right? Okay, different opinions of which Rishayim Yirmiyahu is talking about, whether he's talking about Jews or Babylonians. But no doubt, Habakkuk's wicked people are the Babylonians. Right? They're all asking, why do you allow these people to survive and thrive? God, if you're running the show, I know, because I'm a Novi and I'm in your inner circle. How do you allow these people to give them an earthquake or something? Give them a devastating fire, or I don't know. I know how you run this world, so how are you allowing them to succeed? Right? And the Mefarshim are at odds over whether these prophets actually got an answer. Okay? According to Radak, bless you, Yirmiyahu did not get an answer. According to Rashi, Habakkuk did not get an answer. What's interesting is according to Targum Yonah's son, Yirmiyahu did get an answer. According to Targum Yonah's son, we explain the thriving of the wicked, that Hashem gives them all of their reward, the little reward they may have, He gives it all to them in this world. Right, so that the next world, they have all their suffering. They won't get any reward in the next world. And the tzaddik is the exact opposite. The tzaddik gets rid of all of his suffering here in this world, so that in the next world, where it's much more meaningful, he has a smooth sailing. Rachas da teyam and alaf gives the teyam and beis gives the same. So, alright, I'm not, you know. On that page of Gemara, it says that this might be a good philosophical answer. No one accepts this for themselves. No one wants the suffering. I don't want the suffering. I don't want the reward of the suffering, meaning a more smooth sailing in the next world. Okay. Nonetheless, Targum Yonah's son does give that answer regarding Nebuchadnezzar's success. He did something good and positive when he was younger, that's all. Now he's getting all his reward in this world. That reward is coming at your expense. But Shabbos, that's what we're talking about. That's what Nachum Chabad and Tzfani all talk about. That Nebuchadnezzar's success came only because you were immoral, and I need him to punish you for your immorality. Okay. Got it? Habakkuk regretted his chutzpah at the end of his book. Bless you. He regretted his chutzpah at the end of his book.
He's a great interceder on behalf of his people. He says, God, let your rachamim take over your anger. Say that on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur we say, let your rachamim take over your roges. Right? The roges rachem tizkor. Even in your anger, remember that you are merciful God.
That's Habakkuk, always at the end praying. I mean, look, he spoke with chutzpah because he was so hurt by Bnei Yisrael's suffering. Okay? Alright. But remember this. Remember that what Habakkuk is waiting for in chapter 2, the very beginning. He said, I'm waiting here, God. Tell me. I'm looking forward. Same thing Yirmiyahu says in chapter 12 of his book. Madua Derech Hashem Tzolecha, and his machlokes whether Yirmiyahu got his answer or not. So just remember, Abraham spoke with great chutzpah, HaShofein Kol Haaretz Lo Yaseh Mishpat. Shall the judge of the land not perform justice? By Sidon. Gidon, when the angel came to him and said, God is with you, Gibor Chaya. He spoke with great chutzpah. He said, really, God is with us? Where were all those miracles that we heard from our fathers about Egypt? Why are you allowing the Midianites to cause us such profound suffering? I don't think God is with us. That's real chutzpah. Remember what the angel told him? Leich b'kochacho zeh. Go with this strength. You want to kvetch, you want to complain, do something. Right? Make something happen. Do something. Don't just complain. The world is filled with complainers. Okay, you just gave yourself a job, Gideon. Go. Defeat these Midianites. Bring about a better day. Right? Okay? Yahushua, when the 36 people died against Ai, Hashem tells Yeshua, says to God, why did you take us out of Egypt? Why did you make us cross the Jordan that we should die in the battle? Yeshua is crossing a line here. He's talking to God the way the bad Jews spoke in Sefer Bamidbar. But he redeems himself at the end by saying, what shall be of your great name? Since everyone looks at what happens to us as a reflection of you, I'm not saying this just because it's us. I'm saying it because it's you. This is a reflection upon you, God. You hear it? Right? Moshe, of course, he says, God, tell me, I don't understand your ways. How could you want to destroy them because they made an egel? Explain, what is he saying? What's his philosophical problem? How can you destroy them for making an egel?
I mean, there could be few. I mean, one is that egel is just an intermediary, so it's not necessarily...
Fair enough, but what caused them to make the egel?
Waiting
for me. Why didn't you tell me to go down earlier and forestall that? Furthermore, what did they use to make the egel? Yeah, what did you have to ask them to get all that gold for them to make into an egel? Right? That's the Tiach Dvarim Klapim Mala, because it's V'dizohov. You didn't get them enough gold? God, you knew they were going to make it into an egel, so why didn't you just say, no, I'm not going to have them make it gold? I didn't think they should get the gold. Right?
Can't you also say by when Hashem told him to go and be the leader?
Okay, that's according to Rashi's interpretation of what he's saying. It's not necessarily the Pshat, but it does appear that in the beginning of Moshe's mission, he was afraid of how Bnei Israel would accept him. That does seem to be the case. Certainly the way Rashi presents it. Yes?
You can't eat your king habits, you can't say, you can't argue philosophically that God gave him these conditions to sin, and then why did he take away the conditions that would allow them to sin? Take away their free will to say that if they didn't have it, they couldn't have sinned. If you ask that, give them the goals, they have the opportunity to sin.
Of course that's the answer. Hoshea still says, you gave them gold and they made it to the Baal. You gave them gold, I'm sure they were happy when they got it, and they could have used their free will to make it into, a Mishka.
So, what's the complaint?
The complaint is that it's, still, why did you tempt them in the first place? You know that they're the recent slaves. You're God. You can look into them. Cut them some slack. Who knows better than you what their weaknesses are? Right? So Moshe is still chutzpah, says the Gemara. Gemara likens it unto a king giving his son wallet full of money, a receptacle of perfume around his neck, and he leaves him in front of a house of ill repute. You don't think he's going to sin and tempt it to sin? Right? It was a setup. And God, it doesn't sound to me like it's very godly to set us up. Okay. Right? And Yonah also speaks with chutzpah to God. Yonah's chutzpah, like some of the others, like Gidon, like Moshe, is because of his vast love for his people. Aaron's chutzpah, maybe the biggest of all, he says, "Hashal fate kol ha'aretz lo yaseh mishpat." Shall the judge of the land not promulgate justice? Why wouldn't God just tell him, "You puny little human, how dare you tell me what justice is? I determine what justice is." No, instead God allows man to have a say. Who's puny man who's today here and tomorrow food for worms going to tell God what justice is? Right? But Abraham has a say, God lets him. Okay. Finally, Eliyahu. Eliyahu may also be one of the biggest chutzpahniks. He says, "God, you turned their heart astray. They're turning their heart from you because of things you're doing." So I'm a little bit like Moshe. When that boy dies, he calls up to God. He goes, "God, you're killing the boy too." I mean, like. The story of Eliyahu is really intense. Okay. So these are some of the biblical characters who spoke with great chutzpah to God. Eov, basically, says, "God, give me my day in court. You know as well as I do that my friends are wrong about me." Right? The reader also does. He knows that Eov did not come to suffer because of anything he did. Okay. Of course, you can't remove from this list Koheles, who says, "I see that the wicked people get what the righteous deserve, righteous people get what the wicked deserve, and I see no justice in this world." At least Koheles, you know, goes back and forth until he concludes, "Sof tevara kol nishma selokim yiro." In the end, I'm sure we'll have an answer. Right now, I don't think I do. And if all these guys felt that they couldn't fathom an answer, you know, I'm not sure what answer we can fathom. Guys. Hello. Okay. All right, so the historical background of Tzfania is of course, the rise of Babel, the imminent fall of Babel. We took it all the way up to Perek Beis last time. Let's open up inside Perek Gimel a little bit. Right. He refers to Yerushalayim as Ha'ir HaYona. Have you heard that? The city of the Yona? Yona here has nothing to do with the word dove. Yona is like the word Onoah. Onoah. Like Onoah's Tvar. When Perek Gimel, it's fine. Okay, Ira Yona means a city with oppression. Lo shema b'kol, lo l'kacha musar, v'ashem lo batacha el Elohe lo kareva. Again, Tzfani is using feminine imagery. Right? Sareha b'kirba arayot shoagim. Her princes, her officers, her leaders are in her midst, but they are like roaring lions. They don't seek the betterment of their people. They just seek their to line their own pockets. Shofter ze'evei erev lo gormu laboker. They're like wolves in the evening. Lo gormu laboker. Interesting imagery. A wolf in the evening is very hungry. And if he comes across food, he'll eat it up all then on the spot. He's not going to leave something for the morning. Because a wolf, like a dog, like its cousin, just eats whatever is in front of it. A wolf does not know, that's why we even use the word to wolf down something. Have you heard that? It means you eat it all right away. There are other animals that know how to put aside, like certain squirrels or the... And that's interesting. Have you heard to squirrel away something? So this animal wolfs it down, this animal squirrels it away. Alright? But what's he talking about? Is that his Tzfania's claim in this pasuk is that you live for the moment. Right? After all, what is religion? Religion is to live for is to live for a future time, right? Who's the quintessential living for the moment? Is Esav. I live for today, right? Okay. Right? So he's complaining about the people behaving like wolves who live for the moment. Right? That's what oppression is. You're not thinking of a future time. And he speaks against all the bad Nevi'im who are driving you astray, even as Hashem tries to bring you. Okay? I'm skipping to Pasuk Zion. Amarti. Ach tiri osi tikrimu sovlo yukareis me'onot kol asher pechaditi olelo. I'm just saying to fear me, to listen to my words. Not just because it's moral, but because that's your salvation. I can say that it's in terms of hashkofa pratis, because if you are moral, I will shine my graces upon you. I'll give you a rain in the season. Right? But I know what you've done instead. Instead, you turned against me, become wicked. Therefore, I say, right? I say, because I'm going to judge all the nations, right? And all the nations are going to, one way or another, have to serve me. I say to my own people, B'nai Israel, turn to me. Pasuk Tes says, Ki oze poches ha'amim es amim safa brura likro kulam b'shem Hashem la'avdo shchem echad. This is a very serious question. What is Habakkuk hoping for in this pasuk? What is Habakkuk hoping for here? I'm going to turn all the nations of the world to speak in one language and they will all turn to me. Is that true? Is that what Jews are looking for? I know that's what Muslims consider. Muslim considers that at a certain time, everyone will turn to Allah, those who don't will be killed. Christians hold when Jesus returns, if you do not accept him, right, so stubbornly hold out, even after he returns, if you still hold out, you're all going to die.
Why don't we reaction for Rishon HaLechad? How is that any different?
And many other stuff you might get. But just to think that God is one does not mean you have to be Jewish.
Yeah. And just one language doesn't necessarily mean grammar. It's horrible. Everyone can have
it. But it does mean that you will not have multiple gods. Now, what difference does it make whether you call that God, Jesus, or Allah, or anything, as long as you believe that it is the prime cause. Right? That's why this will answer a very difficult question, possibly, in Malachi. Malachi says, look at you Jews. You're my chosen people. I gave you a land. I took you out of Egypt. I gave you everything. And
you do not serve me properly. Because look at all the other nations. He uses the terminology from Tehillim. Yizrach Shemesh Va'ad Mevo'o Gadol Shmi Bavoyim. V'kulam Mevi'im Muktar Mugash Lefanani. Go east to west in the world, and you see all the nations of the world know me, and they all bring me incense and sacrifices on their altars. Really? Is that true? The Greeks who are worshipping Zeus are bringing korbanos to Hashem? Well, the Brahman says yes. Because if they believe that Zeus created the world, what difference does it make what they call it? And they allow Zeus to have some other underlings that they serve also. But they believe in a creator. Right, that's something. Just believe in a prime cause, that's something. That's what that we're gonna say that the world will turn towards belief.
Belief in
some kind of higher design. Now there are lots of atheists out there who don't believe in such design, and they say that this earth is just a chance blip in the very long billions of years of accidental bombardment of atoms, right? It used to be like even 30 years ago, remember Carl Sagan, who said that all another planet in this universe needs to be just like us, it's just four or five conditions. Regarding carbon, regarding the nearby star, regarding an atmosphere, things like that. So now this has been reevaluated to not just be four or five, but like 40,000. Right? But all what Svanya is saying does not necessarily have to be translated into a statement that everybody we want the whole world to its own. Right? I will tell you though that there is a Gemara in the Sefer Brachos that does seem to read this prophecy. Okay, the Sefer Brura means, Shechem Echad, one shoulder, side by side. But it's an interesting question that can be debated from not only from Tzfani's standpoint, but from other prophets as well. This idea of every shoulder will serve God. Not sure exactly how to pronounce it, but I think it's called synecdoche or something like that. Synecdoche. Right? Anybody know what that is? It's where you apply. An example of this in the Torah is when Moshe tells Paro, you just want our men to leave Egypt and offer this korban. Not one hoof of an animal will remain here in Egypt. That's such a... Not one hoof is where one small element equals the whole. Or the opposite. What? Yeah, like not one shoelace will... Right. Or to do the opposite. Like, I'm the law around here. How? Because I'm the sheriff. And I'm the judge, and I'm the jury. Okay. So, Svanya closes up by saying that all these things will take place regarding the some future time regarding everyone turning towards God, and then I'll leave it up to the Mefarshim to say to what extent, right? Okay. Nugay mimoed osafti mimecha you masay soleh acherva. Meaning pasuk yudches. Nugay mimoed. Rashi writes osafti es hamotzim mimoadai shelo ayu mishamrim shabasos v'yomim tovim. So, according to Rashi's saying, is that along our redemptive theme, along our redemptive theme is that Jews will
turn back towards the Moed. They'll turn back towards keeping Shabbos. You ever hear of this, that the Gemara says if all Jews keep Shabbos, the Mashiach will remember? You ever heard that? It's derived from Sukkim and Yishayahu. But he's just trying to say that part of this is for Jews to keep together and gather together on Moed. And the Neo says, Kom anayich ba'isahi. And I will gather in all of the Jews from all around the world, especially the infirm ones. You know, when you came to America, to Ellis Island, the first person that saw you when you got off the boat was a doctor. If he didn't like what was in your mouth, if he didn't like what was in your eyes, he sent you right back to the boat for another 3-week journey back to Europe. They checked your eyes and your mouth. If they didn't like what they saw in there, they sent you right back.
And what example of things that they would see that would send them back?
A pink eye? I don't know. Rotting teeth? It's true. Most deaths at the beginning of the 20th century were from disease, complications of tooth decay. Right? In America was 46 years old. So that's to be 46 in 1900. So they are the crippled, the weak, the nidacha, the weaker ones. Right? Right? This means that the weakest ones will be brought back first.
You know, when Israel took all those Ethiopians so quickly from so many thousands who came to Ethiopia, they took all the weakest ones first. We have the exact opposite, says Tzfani. They don't want to take any weak ones, any people that have been a burden now or hospitals and the like. Adrava, says Tzfani, when it comes time for you to go back, I see this prophecy exactly kept when the Ethiopians came back. Because Israel sent first and foremost, they took them out of the hospitals, they brought all the weakest and sickest ones first back to Israel. And then they took the stronger ones, were able to last a little longer. I care for the way, look, this country was very, very kind in taking all those people from abroad. People have always wanted to get into this country. Right? Isn't this happening in our own day? Do you say this pasuk every day? This is in the tefillah. Do you know where this is? You don't have to show earlier. It's right in the beginning, right before Kippur. You say, well, what can you have done? You say, Al-Qaeda, right? You say, everyone return for us to try to worship the Shabbat. They should cover Rabin, right? So many people at that point skip right to the Kippur, the Trumas Adeshin, or the Korban Tomid. But in the Siddurim, there's a little paragraph about redemption. And that paragraph has this pasuk, has the end of the time. Okay? So, why did I mention all three of these pasukim at the end of Tzfanya? Because I believe certainly more than anywhere in the last 2,000 years, we have the right today, at this time, to say that these three prophecies of Tzfanya are taking place in our time.
Okay? The Jews are joining together, they are banding together, there is a tshuva movement, they are keeping the Moed, they are, the weak and infirmed are invited back to Israel, and beautiful way to end the Sefer, and an appropriate way to end the course. May we all be zocheh to live out Tzfanya's words.